Good morning, you're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by new panelist, Wendy Lou Gillespie. You can find her on Twitter, at It's Wendy Lou. We've also got veteran panelist Carol Rifkin and Justin Farrar back for another round of conversation. Today we've got a fun one. We're talking about soundtracks. We covered soundtracks one time long ago on What It Is. It's time to revisit and hone in specifically on cult film soundtracks.
I wasn't really a huge Who fan. And then I remember seeing the movie Tommy. And the movie, just seeing all that, it put that connection there, I think, that I needed to have. Like some fish people say that you're not going to like fish until you go to a fish show. You know, you have to connect to the music. And then I was sitting with my daughter and my husband. I think it was over Christmas watching it. And she was just engrossed. And now, like, she records it when it comes on. Like from the Beatles, the Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine.
Uh-huh. It was incredible. I'd never seen it, you know, so I started really seeking them out. But yeah, I think Tommy is probably the first one that I really remember seeing that's all about music. And then just soundtracks in general, the John Cusack with Jack Black, High Fidelity. That for me is probably my favorite music-related movie now. But Tommy really made me like The Who. I mean, I didn't really like them before. I mean, yeah, I didn't really hear it. I didn't get it. And then I saw the movie, and I was like, okay, I get it.
Awesome. I think I've always liked soundtracks. I think they're more and more, the more you talk, the more pop into my head. I was just thinking about The Big Chill and how popular that soundtrack was, kind of in the same way that Walk the Line. Really, a lot of people really connected with that movie and the soundtrack. But there have just been so many cult kind of things. The Doors, you know, Jim Morrison, that Val Kilmer documentary, and just even older ones, that one about Charlie Parker. I couldn't remember
Bird.
Them.
With Bird. Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just so many that had Woodstock, you know, the documentary Woodstock had just such great stuff with it. And am I stealing all the good ones, really?
Well, kind of on that tip, mm-hmm. You know, Woodstock and I guess to a lesser extent, Monterey Pop Festival are considered the two giant music documentaries of that era. But, you know, one came out a couple years ago called Festival Express that I actually think the performances from the bands are far better in that than in either Monterey and Woodstock. There's some footage of the band, and footage of the band is not too common, and they're just on fire in that movie.
And they're playing to like 2,000 or 3,000 people maybe.
Yeah, it's a documentary all about this train that this show promoter put together, this train that went across Canada from east to west with all the bands on it. And then they partied on the train.
So you've got Janis and Buddy Guy and the band. And
Rick Danko's out of control, the bassist from the band. He is a soundbite, just everything.
Promoter lost his shirt, but they had a great time. It was a totally unique experience where they never got to spend time together. And they were on this train for days between towns. And it's amazing. You go and you look at the footage of just the era being so different and the mayor of the town coming out and demanding that they let all of the youth from the area get in for free.
He's trying to get the youth vote.
Yeah.
By turning it into a free concert, because that was a big thing at the time, post-Woodstock. The Buddy Guy footage is really hot, too. You can tell it is like post-Hendrix, so he felt he needed to, you know. Obviously, Hendrix took from Buddy Guy, and then Buddy Guy's like, okay, I'm playing for Hendrix's people. Let me do like an 8-minute solo. And so he starts Money and then ends it with just this wailing solo that's great.
You're making me think about Almost Famous, that movie that... That came to mind, that kind of following the famous.
I stumbled across a really bad film in college. You know, every weekend it was like 5 movies for $5. And I think by my senior year, we were down to like seriously 4 or 5 films left in the place that we hadn't yet rented. And one was called Death Drug with the guy from who plays Ricardo Tubbs on Miami Vice, Philip Michael Thomas. And he's there just kind of screaming with this big afro. And you can tell it's from like 1978. And it's all about a young disco star who gives into angel dust. And it's funny because you could tell it started off as a blaxploitation flick, but then it wasn't finished. And so it's really strange. It's from like 78, 79, but then there's an intro tag tacked on where he's wearing his Miami Vice outfit. and he introduces the film as like an educational movie. And then it goes, but then it, when you finally see the film, then it flashes back to footage that's all grainy. It's really one of the weirdest. It's up there with Ed Wood kind of stuff. It's awful, but it's the Gap Band makes a cameo in it.
The Gap Band.
It also brings to mind, you think of cult films, and Repo Man was one of the biggest and helped further a lot of the music on that soundtrack. Circle Jerks, and you had Iggy Pop on there, and The Plugs, and one of the big cult movies, Emilio Estevez as the star, and one of the most violent movies of all time, really, but fascinating, and it just very memorable for its soundtrack. A little bit like we were talking about the Big Chill. Oh, Big Chill,
right.
Really,
yeah.
Was, I mean, it was kind of a big movie, and, uh-huh. and it really brought back to life a lot of that era's music back into the mainstream.
And right.
I don't think Repo Man really pulled it off in the same way, but it
was the anti-Big Chill.
Definitely the anti-Big Chill, but both very enduring and doing a lot for music, respectively.
There's a lot of cult movies. I don't know, like Rocky Horror Picture Show and Spinal Tap, a lot of stuff
and
like
Pulp
that.
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, and Pulp Fiction. Were
a great soundtrack.
John Carpenter's an interesting director. You know, he's probably one of the great cult directors in American cinema history. But in probably, you know, maybe going back to the mid-80s, his soundtracks, which he created out of economic necessity on synthesizers because he had no money, and so he's just making this creepy music, they've become almost as popular as the movies in a lot of ways. And in fact, a lot of the early techno producers from Detroit, particularly Cybertron and I believe Model 500, they all cite John Carpenter's soundtracks to Halloween, Escape from New York, and The Thing as a big influence on their own experimentations with electronic and programmed music.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of things have spawned other records. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? That was so popular that another whole record came out of it, and then a whole concert tour came out of it after that. And it kind of even changed the face of traditional songs because it exposed it to such a wide market. But I guess, you know, it's an interesting thing. I was sitting here trying to think about why we like those movie soundtracks. Is it the sound or the connection or the theme? And I think in some ways it's the theme of those things being all put together. I went to see Beer Y'all. It sold out. And all the music in that was written by people in Western North Carolina. And people are already saying, where's the soundtrack? You know, where's the soundtrack? So they're working on it. And it's real thematic, I think, that part of why we like soundtrack things.
So you like horror movies? I can't go see scary movies.
Me either.
You know, I can just hear the music, and it's the music. You know something's gonna happen. And I mean, Heroes, the TV show Heroes, if same way. You know, all the creepy sounds and the music. It really is what makes like a good horror movie a good horror movie. And then you have the really scary ones that have no soundtrack, like No Country for Old Men. You know,
oh,
and then you
that
see what the
creepy
absence of music
yeah,
really does,
creepy.
And just how you feel, they're in my house. You know, it feels like something completely different.
You're right. I've screamed out loud in a movie theater and had my poor son go, Mom, that's so embarrassing.
The no soundtrack approach reminds me of, ever seen Two-Lane Blacktop? It's from the early 70s. It's a great American movie from that era. It's with Dennis Wilson, the drummer from the Beach Boys, and James Taylor. And Warren Oates, of course, a great character actor. And it's just about these two guys, and they kind of race across America in a hot rod. And there's no soundtrack. It's just, you know, atmospheric sound and the sound of the radio when they turn it on. And it's just that way. It's very meditative and spacious. It's really cool.
What do you think? Email us whatitis@wncw.org. We're talking about soundtracks, especially cult film soundtracks, and their influence on music in your collection and out there in the world. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Wendy Lou Gillespie, Carol Rifkin, and Justin Farrar. Until next time.